Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How does life change after 50? Millions of baby boomers moving towards senior status are remaining more active, healthy, and engaged than their parents' and grandparents' generations might have dreamed, and helping to redefine our notions of what it means to grow older. But there are challenges nonetheless, from paying ever-increasing health care costs to replacing the savings lost in the downturn of the markets to caring, in many cases, both for their elderly patients and their own children. The national president of AARP can relate to those challenges and to the trailblazer status of Americans meeting them. Born in the 1950s, Jenny Chin Hansen is the organization's first boomer president, as well as the first gerontologist and the first Asian to fill the slot. We've invited her to talk about how AARP and its 35 million members are adjusting to the new realities of 50-plus life. Jenny, welcome to Think.
Thank you very much, Chris.
What is the primary mission of AARP today?
Our primary mission is to help all of us age with dignity and purpose as we move along in our age. And as you mentioned, our membership starts at 50. And so we have now three generations of members, because somebody could be at 50, somebody could be at 75, somebody could be in their late 90s and be members of just, a thriving aging population.
I think of those three groups that you mentioned, and boy, their needs and their concerns have to be vastly different from one another.
Most definitely. You have boomers who are members who have teenagers or young children still. And then, of course, their parents who oftentimes will have some health problems that they're beginning to manage. And possibly then even grandparents, of course, who might have that many more complications as they deal with multiple chronic diseases or managing multiple medications and so forth.
The AARP doesn't endorse or oppose political candidates, but lobbying obviously is a huge issue. Can you talk about how decisions are made about what kinds of issues to pursue and then what positions to take on them?
Certainly. The positions are really ultimately approved by the board of directors, a volunteer board of directors. But we have the opportunity also to have the expertise of a group of volunteers who are part of our National Policy Council. They're divided into three groups of issues relative to economic issues, health and long-term care, and consumer issues. And, of course, we also touch base with our members on a regular basis. We do polls and studies with our members, as well as are acutely aware of some of the policy issues that are occurring on the federal and the state levels. And so as a result, we distill all of that and really have a chance to set some priorities.
Can you talk about what you think it is that causes people when they get to 50 and above to become, in many cases, so much more politically engaged than they had been earlier in life?
Well, I think when you're in your 50s today, and even before the major economic situation we're facing, people are starting to feel the various pressures of feeling that they will have work and economic security their lifelong. They're beginning to probably even experience a chronic condition. You know, it's not unusual for people to have hypertension, for example. So I think one's a sense of mortality as well as one's place. So there's a health side. And then there's a legacy side. We start to think that, wow, you really want to leave a footprint on this earth, you know, as you live your life. And how do you both make sure that your family and your community are well? And so the whole idea of some sense of social contribution starts to come into play. And then finally, having some fun. I mean, this is just part of the fullness of living. It gives you a chance in your 50s to start doing some reflection.
I know that you can just join AARP and get your membership card and sort of leave it at that. But I wonder if you can talk about the varying levels of interaction people tend to have with the organization.
Right. Well, many people to this day, you know, think about discounts. And that is something that is important. I mean, more so probably nowadays with some of the economic challenges that we have. So people look for that. And because we're able to work with providers who are able to do this for large groups, then, of course, changing the marketplace as well as hopefully getting some good value, there are the discounts. But then separately, the issues that relate to feeling part of a community, the concerns that we all seem to have now, and understandably so, about health care and what impact the cost of health care, the availability of health care, that starts getting some people interested in the issues that we work on. So some people want to volunteer. They sign up and or share their stories that allow us to benefit from their life experiences that give us some of the substance that we can continue to advocate on behalf of people. A good situation right now is even the loss of jobs that occurring for all populations. But it hits people who are certainly in their late 40s and 50s and beyond with some greater vulnerability. When that happens, people can volunteer. They can volunteer doing it online. They can join in their state offices with issues that are being promoted on a more local state-based level. So there are ways that you can volunteer, and there are right now the availability of probably about 1 million volunteers who are volunteers like myself and board members on the state level and helping people with driving, education, or this time in particular, tax season. We have about another 35,000 people who are helping with doing taxes free for individuals. So there's tangible ways to do it. There's online ways to do it. And then we have our e-activists. When there are pieces of legislation that have an impact on people that people care about, we help them get their voices heard in terms of their state legislatures or on the federal level.
Even, Jenny, it seems 5 years ago, people might have thought of people, particularly who are in their 70s and beyond, as being not all that interested in being online. But having been through your website, it seems as if that is changing quicker than you can even keep up with.
Right. Actually, the fastest growing numbers of people who are going online are older people. And so I think older people have discovered this whole aspect of what we think of social networking for younger people. So people are getting on Facebook. They're using our own ARP.org online communities to be able to give tips to each other, you know, from things that are really helpful on fixing your cars to caregiving. I mean, people are giving support to one another in that particular way that they may not have used before.
I know that planning for end-of-life issues has been something that you've taken on as a particular mission, and it seems that no matter how young or old people are, it's always a difficult conversation to have. Can you talk about some of the ideas for people who know they need to get ready to do this but haven't been able to do it so far?
Right. Well, it's really very hard. I mean, even the first beginnings of discussing end of life was really not about older people. It was about a Karen Quinlan who was 21 years old at the time and not able to speak for herself. So, but nowadays, the ability to talk about end of life continues to be a sensitive topic, but certainly it's more germane for those of us who are that much older, because I think there is just the factual reality of mortality. But I think the opportunity to take time, especially when, say, our parents, friends may have an episode and something happens. Those are such wonderful moments of opportunity to just say, you know, gosh, it's really a shame that has happened. I wonder what their children, you know, are doing or able to manage about that. So there are opportunities to talk about it. And it's so much more helpful at a time when it's not a crisis for ourselves, because what happens when a crisis does hit because of a health issue, everybody gets really flustered. You know, there's a lot of emotion about it. And sometimes we're not really sure really what mom or dad really wanted. So it's so much easier to probably talk about things in a gradual way. And it's what I call important conversations for us to have in later life. So opportunistic times, as well as the fact that perhaps even we who are older take the opportunity to talk about that with our children. I've done that with my son, for example. I you know, just to raise it, just because it is so much actually kinder and gentler to our children, as well as to our parents, when we can have it at a non-emotional time.
And I would imagine it's not just for ourselves, but when there are siblings, we need to figure out how the labor will be divided if the decision is made that the family will sort of take care of someone.
Most definitely. Again, where I used to work for years, we would bring in the entire family with the parent so that we could have the fuller discussion that perhaps there is one person in the family who gets designated as probably the primary communicator or somebody who might be doing the primary organizing of the caregiving. So some of that is laid out in the open, and it allows perhaps an impartial party to help guide the conversation so that people's personalities and emotions, you know, don't get too much in the way. The second part that I didn't mention earlier in this is that it's amazing how much money is spent on those last few months of life. And sometimes that is spent in ways that cost the family and the elder as well as society in a way that maybe not if they had an opportunity, it wouldn't be spent that way. Because it's been shown that the last year of life, we sometimes spend so much more than we ever did in our entire lifetime on our health. And not always with the quality of living and care that we may have wanted. So the ability to have those earlier conversations, as I say, when it just happens to come up, and sometimes, as I say, as the mother, I, you know, would even bring it up around the holidays just because it's an opportunity when you see your children to say these things. And it's not about being morbid. It's really about just being open about it, that these are decisions that you've thought about, and to be able to convey it back and forth in a conversational way rather than feeling that you have having to fill out a legal piece of paper at that moment.
Your son is still in his 30s. You're quite young. You're in your 50s. Does he look at you and say, God, I don't want to talk about this?
Well, you know, it's interesting because he's a physician, and oftentimes physicians aren't always eager to talk about this themselves.
He's got it all day at work.
Right. So, but he listened, you know, and even sometimes when people don't necessarily respond, it's one of the things that they will remember, you know, and I think that when, and especially in his case, being in the healthcare field, he does know these episodes will happen. So I much rather have him have a memory of me at a time when I could say something lucidly and convey that. So even if he doesn't have a huge conversation about it, I think it's tucked away in the back of his mind. And so when the time comes, and it will, then he may have a little bit more peace of mind to feel that he was able to hear me at a time that I was able to say this when I was fully able to.
Your field, when you are not volunteering 7 days a week for 2 years as president of AARP, is gerontology. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how that field in particular has evolved from the time you started your career until now.
Right. Well, at the time I started my career, the idea was, quotes, taking care of the elderly, you know, was what thought. And being a nurse, it's about that. But that whole field started to grow because many of the social scientists recognized that when you think of the sheer numbers of the boomers coming along, it really allowed for that focus much more systematically in terms of what the needs were going to be, what the characteristics, what the kind of energy level. Those of us who studied Eric Erickson realized like there are all these different levels of life that you go through. So systematically, you know, this became more of a discipline. And this is now offered in schools and graduate schools. And so it has now formalized in many studies and programs are available.
Jenny Chin Hansen is my guest. She's national president of AARP. We're talking about being a senior in the 21st century. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Jenny Chin Hansen is here. She is National President of AARP. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Of course, AARP used to stand for something, and now it's just the letters because you're not limited to people who are retired.
That's right. It used to stand for the American Association of Retired Persons. And as we have over time, now that membership is at 50, as it turns out, our nearly 40 million members, 50% of us are still working in some form.
How are members dealing with the reality that the plans many people had in place for retiring at a certain age, be it 60 or even 70, have to be put off now because so many people have lost so much money in the stock market?
You're absolutely right. I think people had made some assumptions based on the way their savings were accruing and what plans they had diligently made. And so people are putting off their retirement. People who are in the workforce now, and individuals who have retired are being that much more aware of their expenditures and their costs. And so our concern is that, for example, the cost of medical care for people who are retired on a fixed income, and because oftentimes their co-payments and payments are so high that the vulnerability of spending so much money that people are at risk for bankruptcy is higher than ever before.
Realistically, is Medicare enough to depend on to ensure that you'll get the health care you need, or is supplemental insurance essentially a requirement for people who want to live a healthy life?
Well, I think many people purchase supplemental insurance because it gives them that peace of mind for the 20% that Medicare doesn't normally pay. So for many people, this really works. But even paying for supplemental insurance may be a challenge for some people. So I think one of the things that AARP also focuses on is the whole effort of staying well. And health prevention and health promotion is something that we are trying to help the whole healthcare system move greater toward. Because what happens is people wait sometimes until things happen. And some of these things relative to happening actually are preventable. And especially as an example, just being overweight and obese is becoming an issue. And AARP, for example, has a special program that starts literally today that I've actually joined. And it's called Fat to Fit. And our ability to really focus on not a particular commercial program, but it's our focus on activity, how we're eating, and getting some online support with a volunteer by the name of Carol Carlson, who helped her community in Nevada County, California, lose 4 tons of weight just as a group. and for example, that is a health prevention activity that mitigates the expenses that we might incur if we end up developing diabetes, for example. So this is the kind of stuff that we're trying to help people know that there are preventive things, and then, of course, understanding what the cost of health care and medical care is.
We have an email here from Wayne in Dallas who says, many of us were very disappointed at the performance of AARP when the bad compromises producing Medicare Plan D happened. I've recently rejoined in the hopes that AARP will take this opportunity to better advocate for major health care reform for uninsured and underinsured Americans of all ages. What strategy is in place to avoid downgrading the current swell of health care support to another boondoggle for the insurance companies?
Well, I think from the very beginning, even when Medicare Part D was moving along, we had always wanted to make sure that there was fuller coverage than the missing gap that people sometimes will call the donut hole.
We should say, by the way, this is the drug benefit.
That is right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And also for negotiating authority so that Medicare could get some discounts that currently, say, the VA gets in some of the states. So we continue to do that, as well as the importation of safe drugs, to the United States. So that was actually on our agenda from the very get-go. But again, legislation that gets passed is always difficult and messy. So we recognize that getting more people covered, at least to start with, was a piece of legislation, although imperfect, was one that could be improved upon. And yes, we are very much continuing on that effort to improve what we currently have.
Is it getting less confusing for people to choose a plan?
Well, I say that it was a very difficult implementation. AARP had no control over that. That was something that would be rolled out by the government to have, in many ways, so many different plans. It does cause confusion with, ironically, having choice, but almost too much choice. So I think there have been some fewer plans than before. But I think the principle that people wanted to maintain of having choice is still in play. But there are points now of how to pick plans that cover your particular drugs and having some plan choice finders that are more helpful to people.
I know there's some information, obviously, about this on your website. Where do you send people when they just don't know what to look for and how to choose?
Well, I think there are many points of helpfulness, and of course, Medicare itself wants us to direct people to Medicare.gov as a website. And then with AARP itself, we have our AARP.org, and you could put in then /medications to really have a chance to focus on that. And then third of all, that many people will do, of course, is just go straight to a Google approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How does the U.S. compare in terms of caring for its elderly with other industrialized countries?
Well, I think, you know, we are known to sometimes have the best of care in the world, but the best of care may only be for a subset. In terms of caring for older individuals, we have some great programs in our country and some areas of excellent coverage, but frankly, it probably is not as strong as some other countries have managed to do. I was asked this question recently when I was doing a community forum at TCU, and it was asked about that. Are there any countries who are able to kind of do this for less and perhaps possibly do it better? There are our colleagues across the Atlantic in the Netherlands as well as in Germany who are able at this point to include caring for older people with both the healthcare side and the more chronic long-term care side in the Netherlands, for example, as well as in Germany, that do it actually for less money that we spend proportionally for our population and manage to cover everyone.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is National AARP President Jenny Chin Hansen. I wonder if you can talk for a minute. So many people now are at least considering places for older Americans only, like places like Sun City when they finally retire. Can you talk about some of the pros and cons of living in a community like that as opposed to a community where people of multiple generations all live together?
Sure. Well, I think those communities that were formed for older populations really were very popular about 20, 25 years ago. And there continue to be settings where people feel comfortable being with their age cohort. But what happens is people age in place. And so the whole concept there is having enough resources and focus for that population. But more recent studies that we have done, that we have found that 9 out of 10 people today would really prefer living in their own counties and their communities and aging in place in where they are. In fact, more often than not, in their own houses. So there is more of an intergenerational sense of being in a regular community rather than going to a specialized age designated community. So a lot of it depends on personal preference more than anything else.
Are people better off in those cases often in big cities or metropolitan areas as opposed to rural areas? Are there more services there?
There are definitely more services in the bigger cities just because of the aggregate of the population. However, one of the things that is going to eventually happen in the next 15, 20 years, we'll have about 1/4 of our population who are age 65 and older out in rural communities. So it is one of the challenges that we have to make sure that, again, whether homes are adapted so that people can live more safely and independently. And that's part of one of AARP's initiatives under livable communities. But I think the whole question of how to get services will start becoming a greater issue because people may live as here in Texas, 100 miles from a physician.
When you mention adaptability, people think instantly of ramps and making sure the shower is safe and things like that. But fall prevention is a very big deal, even for people who are getting along and getting around just fine.
Most definitely. After 50, we are at risk for more falls. And what is amazing and perhaps not known to people is that once you're 65 and older, you have a 1 in 3 chance in a given year of falling. And of the people who fall, about 1 in 3 actually suffer some kind of severe injury. And from that, a subset of people actually then have their lives forever changed, if not, frankly, encounter, death. So falls are such a preventable area, and we've teamed up working with the Center for Disease Control that has really made this a high priority of injury prevention for people with things that are relative to keeping your muscle strength and your balance. So these are things, again, we can do. The ability to make sure that your medications are well matched for you, because sometimes people end up taking too many medications and that causes some falls. Even to the point of having your home environment. And surprisingly, half the falls that occur for people are actually in their own homes. So as you point out, lighting, making sure throw rugs have some rubber backing, or making sure you don't wear just leather shoes that are real slippery. And then finally getting your eyes checked, because again, when your eyes, when you don't have good glasses, the likelihood of falls are increased.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Carrollton and speak with Lynn. Hi, Carrollton. Hi, Lynn in Carrollton.
in Carrollton. That's great. I love your show. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you.
This is a really interesting topic to me. I am very blessed with a very healthy mom who is 76 years old and still works at gift shops and stuff like that. But a couple years ago, she actually made too much money, and she had to pay exorbitant taxes, or we thought, on just a very basic living wage. She doesn't have a retirement income. She's getting Social Security, but that's it. Is there any lobbying going on that can make some kind of exemption for older people so they can actually, live without having to be penalized by taxes?
Well, I think this is one of the areas that certainly people who are living on Social Security sometimes will pay some extra money for how much they make. Although with your mom's age, I think she's not taxed as much as somebody who might be a bit younger and on Social Security. But I think this whole component of how to ensure economic security, and here she is at her age still working, there is greater awareness of being sensitive to people who are making modest incomes. And there is a program called the Earned Income Tax Credit that when you file your taxes, if you are earning below a certain amount, there's some possibilities that people end up getting some money back. So I wonder if, and hope that maybe your mom has been evaluated to see whether or not that might be one way to get back money now without even new lobbying.
Is that the sort of thing they could call? I know that your tax folks today are helping people with returns and probably can't take any other kind of call, but is that something that they could call an AARP liaison for, or would they go to an attorney?
Right. Well, I think just to perhaps learn more about it, they could certainly call our AARP 1-800 number just to get some direction of where they can go. And that's just 1-800-OUR-AARP. Or if you go to the website, that would be aarp.org, and then type in the question and see if we can bounce that back with an answer for you.
We'll make sure and get those links up on our website as well. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372, and it's where we find Georgia in Tyler. Hi, Georgia.
Hi. Chris,
yes.
Thanks so much for the show. I'm enjoying the show today. Jenny, I need to know if AARP is nationally lobbying for legislation for homeowners' rights against foreclosures and eminent domain abuse that affects the elderly more than anyone else for property owners associations.
What I probably am not able to put my finger directly on it at this point, but I know that the whole issue of foreclosures that especially now affect older people is something that we have definitely put some work into. The issue of eminent domain is something probably a little bit more specific. So we do have a national policy council, and some of our volunteers focus so specifically on that area. So I would suggest that if you would like, you could, number one, write me directly by email by just writing Dear Jenny at AARP, that's J-E-N-N-I-E, and I can make sure that somebody can maybe answer your question more specifically.
How many emails do you get in a typical day?
Well, the staff help consolidate mm-hmm. that, so they give me just summary types of things, and some of the questions they can handle, so I'm actually not sure.
But I imagine it's a large number if you've got lots of people helping with that. Yeah.
Well, I think AARP as a whole certainly understandably and appropriately gets some a lot of questions.
Tell me a little bit more about the social networking component that you guys have added.
Right. Well, actually, when we go onto the site, there are people who have particular interest, and they form groups on our .org site and talk to each other and have an opportunity to give each other advice and even a caregiving support system as well. This latest thing that I mentioned, Fat to Fit, is one that is another way that groups of people don't even have to know each other if you want to basically form a group that ranges, I believe it's between 5 and 20.
Never hurts to have a buddy when you're dieting and exercising.
That's precisely it. It's like that was what was found to be so effective in Carol Carson's work, that having a group to talk with and point out what our struggles are. And so I know many places are doing this, but for AARP members itself, we definitely welcome. And in fact, they don't have to be members. And we just want all of us to move toward greater health.
Jenny Chin Hansen is my guest. She's national president of AARP. We'll be back to our discussion in a moment. And if you have a question, you're welcome to call 1-800-933-5372 or send an email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Jenny Chin Hansen is my guest. She's national president of AARP. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. The baby boomers continue to change everything about everything they ever touch. And I have to imagine that getting older will be the next thing, because it doesn't look the same, even for my parents, as it might have for their grandparents.
Right. I think aging, as we talk about it now, I mean, there's a transformative process that is going on, so that being 60 today, which is what I am now, actually.
It's the new 40.
Right. Just that we have greater capacity and our health, blessedly, is better than perhaps in the past. And we have opportunities to contribute in different ways. So I think one of the areas that AARP has an opportunity to do, as I said, we have now three generations of members, that those of us who are part of the earlier generation really see that aging is really in both physical, but it's it's also in your heart and in your own mind's eye. And so the capacity, you know, to do so much more and contribute to others is something that is more important than ever. And ARP has recognized this, that we have really joined this whole aspect of civic engagement, which has started to move nationally, and especially since younger populations are beginning to do more volunteer work. And so are people like myself who are doing this. ARP has worked with Service Nation, which has been now a national effort that has teamed up with what our president is calling upon of service. And we have created a social effort called createthegood.org. And within ARP, of things that we actually put online every quarter that people can practically do in terms of contributing. And it could be something as modest as 1 hour of activity to somebody who really wants to spend some days at doing things. And our first one was relative to energy saving types of things that we could do both in our own homes but to help others. We currently have one on wiser use of medications, and that's something we can do, again, ourselves for about an hour, or do something for our church or synagogue and help there do things for service. So I think we are recognizing that we are really a part of the fiber of the community, much like your grandmother was when she was still delivering Meals on Wheels in her mid or late 80s, you said?
She was, and she was. I feel very fortunate because she was a great example of what it means to sort of live every minute of your life. She lived till she was 90. Yeah, and she would deliver Meals on Wheels in her 80s too, and she would call them those old folks because in some cases they were younger than she was, but she felt so active and involved that she never thought of herself. She got sick, but she never got old.
Right.
At the end.
Well, it's amazing to recognize that even ARP was founded by a woman who, in her retirement, recognized that people needed care, and she was she was a volunteer herself to other retired teachers. She was the first female principal in the state of California. And when she ended up spending some volunteer time, she found that some of her colleagues were financially so vulnerable that, in fact, there's what we call the chicken coop story. I don't know if you've heard this, but she found that after a full period of working as a teacher, that one of her colleagues only had enough money for medicine and food. And then she had to live in a converted chicken coop behind somebody's house. And she got so incensed that she started this whole effort that what has now become AARP. And she founded AARP when she was 73 years old.
That's amazing. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. And let's go next to Craig in Dallas. Hi, Craig.
Good afternoon, Chris. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for your show, and thanks for taking my call. It's truly informative today. Question I have for your guest has to do with long-term care insurance. My mom, being as pragmatic as possible, is looking into possibility of getting that. Her past history includes a mini stroke, TIA versus CIA, CVA symptoms. But I wanted to know, will we have any issue now that we're starting the investigative process of finding underwriters for that type of medical history? And she is a member of AARP, and I didn't know if AARP would have any restrictions on that.
Thanks for your call.
Well, the long-term care insurance is always written by underwriters. And so whether AARP offers it or whether any other policies have this. And so they have underwriters by themselves have a set of criteria of how they will judge, say, the cost as well as the entry for insurance. And that would be something that I know they would just weigh in, and I don't know how they will decide, but it is just a standard of practice universally across any long-term care insurance or for health insurance for that matter.
Is there an ideal age at which to start looking into this? Are you more likely to be accepted when you're 60 than when you're 75?
Well, I think at the younger we are, the fewer chronic conditions it's likely for the average person to have. So I think that there's a plethora of guidance as to when, quotes, one starts purchasing insurance, because it is a financial decision, and it, like any kind of insurance, you have to decide whether what risk you are for that. But needless to say, I think the general principle, the younger you are, the more affordable that monthly insurance is or that your annual premiums will be. And I think I've seen some financial writers who have indicated that buying insurance perhaps either in your late 50s or early 60s on average tends to be a time when some of these advisors recommend.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next on the line is Joe in Denton. Hello, Joe.
Yes, hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question I had for your guest is my wife, she turned 50 this year, and she's been institutionalized in the hospital, and she's unable to care for herself or speak or sign documents. She was in the process of signing, you know, the forms for AARP whenever she became ill. I was wondering if there was any way that I could finish that registration process for her, or do I have to, you know, wait until hopefully she's able to sign papers or whatnot at a later time?
I hope she does well again soon. Right. Thanks for your call.
Right. Well, I just wanted to be sure, Joe, that this is, if it's about membership in AARP, that's something, frankly, you could do, and then your wife becomes a member automatically. On the other hand, if it's about insurance, then that probably is a different element to itself that requires probably more formal guidance on that one.
I think he mentioned that she was signing up for AARP when she became ill. So that's
right. Then, Joe, it's not a problem that she has to join. You could actually join, and she becomes a member automatically.
Great. And if for some reason, if Joe or someone in his situation were not 50, could he still sign up all the paperwork for her in her name?
If he's not 50, technically he's not yet qualified. He could be an associate member. However, if only she is 50 and this is a factor, my suggestion is just write me an email at Dear Jenny, Dear J-E-N-N-I-E, all one word, at AARP.org, and I'll see that it gets along its way.
How do you recruit new members? I think I've known a lot of people who have sort of proudly flashed their cards because of all the discounts and the benefits and things like that, but there have to be some people who aren't sure, or they think it's for people much older than they are.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find people and let them know what's going on?
Well, it turns out we're able to contact most people who are about to turn 50. These are through public lists that are available, because I know people always are wondering how is it that we find them, you know, right before their 50th birthday. So we do tend to send out mailings to people. Separately, well, our magazines are available in many places, and so there are availability of signing up through that system. And then finally, word of mouth. I think people start to realize that perhaps we're not only for the most older of the older populations, and that hopefully our magazines and our publications become more visible. For example, on the cover for this particular cycle is Dolly Parton, you know, and we had Dustin Hoffman earlier. So people start to perhaps relate to some of this, and it's about health and economic security. It's about lifestyle, living in the community, and different things, and about dating in later lives. People start to recognize this is about us and it's germane.
I wonder if you can talk about the way that you imagine the organization will evolve between now and the time that you are at the very sort of outer edge of the clientele that AARP serves.
Well, I think that we'll continue to have the lifelong evergreen issues of making sure that we have affordable, quality, accessible health care. I imagine that that's where we started 50 years ago, and I wouldn't be surprised if this will be a factor in the future. And assuring that we have enough income to live on with dignity, and how we would save. But I do think that another chapter of this will be that we will change the marketplace with guiding the development of products that will help really use our capacity. Because I was thinking about your grandmother. Is there something we could have designed, you know, for somebody like her, who hopefully is somebody that I can become like when I would have reached her age? To transform the way aging will be in the future is where I see that AARP has a tremendous opportunity to create a real social good, so that all generations live well with respect and regard, and understand that we are interdependent.
Has employment discrimination been a big issue for AARP in terms of advocacy and lobbying? So many people say if you lose your job after you're about 50, it is incredibly hard to find another employer to take you on.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because one of our major components of our foundation, which is geared for all people 50 and older, is our litigation unit. And so we have been so active on the whole movement on anti-discrimination relative to age for jobs. And so, yes, unfortunately, because of this economic downturn, the people who are so vulnerable are people at least from the beginning of their late 40s to people who are older losing their jobs. So it's something we pay attention to, and some of our states are actually developing some innovative programs to be able to think about some job retraining, you know, on behalf of people. So as people look for different jobs, they're better equipped. The other thing I might mention is that we host a contest every year for the 50 best employers in the United States for people 50 and older. So we're trying to shape kind of the awareness and the attitude that you can make your workplace both effective for the company but friendly for people who are 50 and older. So we highlight these different companies every year.
And I guess there's also an issue for people who have done very well at their jobs, but at some point they become too physically demanding, although they may have the capacity to work at some other kind of job.
Most definitely, you know, certainly as a nurse, this is one of the big areas of healthcare right now, since we have a shortage of nurses and our average age for nurses is about 47, 48 years old. So this is a classic case in point in which we're aware of how do we retain the wisdom and skill of older workers, but perhaps having a different kind of role than some of the heavier work that people have done. So this is an area that we focus on. How do we help companies and organizations look at what adaptations are necessary but could still benefit from the skill set that they may have in a different way. So this is another area of movement, and we're certainly working with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that focuses on some of the workforce issues, and they've given us some grant money on a foundation to help develop a center for championing nursing in America.
You spoke earlier about the importance of people over 50 redefining for themselves what it means to grow older. I wonder the extent to which you think younger Americans are starting to get it and recognize that people who are beyond a certain age are far more likely to be really involved in the community and great contributors.
I think gradually, and I believe that a lot of our younger people in their 20s now are recognizing the value and the opportunity to work across generations. So there's actually a greater openness to begin to benefit from kind of this cross-mentoring approach in terms of some of the newer, say, communication technologies of Twitter, because oftentimes it's younger people who are helping their grandparents, say, get online. And then vice versa, some of the life challenges many of us have gone through when people are older than my generation have gone through, kind of put it in perspective when people are facing some decisions. So yes, we are so excited about this opportunity to cross-fertilize.
Jenny Chin Hansen is National President of AARP. You can learn more about the organization at aarp.org. Jenny, it's been great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Chris, for having me on.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.